This is the September 24 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Darren Fry from Water Street Solutions. He's in Peoria, Illinois. And Joe Vaklovic joins us from Standard Grain in Gallatin, Tennessee. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find and listen to our program anytime you'd like. You can do that online at willag.org, willag.org, or if you'd prefer to use your favorite podcast application, why not? You can find us in Stitcher and SoundCloud, NPR One, Spotify, the Google Podcast and Apple Podcast stores as well. However you'd like to listen to us, please take a moment and tune us in, whether that's online or on the air. Let's turn our attention now to our panelists for the day. Darren Fry from Water Street Solutions. This is your first appearance on Commodity Week. I'd like you to take some time and introduce yourself and tell me a little bit about your background, please.
Well, thanks, Todd. Thanks for having me on. Just a little bit about me. I live in Peoria. I grew up here and have never left, and found my wife in high school. We're high school sweethearts. We've been married 38 years, and we've raised three children and have nine grandchildren. So we're really blessed to have all of them be here in the Peoria area. Just recently, I had a son move to Nashville, down close to where Joe is, and it's a great place to visit. So we'll go down there frequently to see his three boys, as they're part of that grandchildren group. So that's a little bit on the personal side. My wife and I started Water Street Solutions just a little over 25 years ago, and we had a vision to create a business that would integrate financial analysis, crop insurance, and marketing into kind of a holistic approach to help farmers make decisions looking at their farm operation almost like in a matrix. And today we have our office in downtown Peoria. We enjoy working with our 15 employees. And we're in our 26th year of business here. So that's a little bit about me.
My wife and her family are from Peoria. I grew up about an hour south of there. It is an absolutely great city. I've learned to love it. When I grew up, it was not a place that I visited very often, but after the fact, it really grows on you. What a nice town it is. Joe Vaklovic is here as well from Standard Grain out of Gallatin, Tennessee. Joe, why don't you kick me off here today with a list of items that we ought to discuss for the afternoon?
I think we should talk about the implications of what appears to be a very quick harvest. We've got some very dry weather. In that same conversation, I think you've got to talk about the logistics issues this year, the spread issues this year, what's going in the bin, what's going to be sold out of the field. I think that those are big issues right now. We've got to talk about demand. Export demand has been fantastic. We've got still some kind of lackluster areas. Ethanol in particular is one of those. And then I think we got to talk about South America. Brazil's going to plant record soybean acreage without a doubt this fall. It's just a question of whether or not the weather cooperates.
And is there anything, Darren, that he missed in the list?
I think that's a really good list. I had a couple of those on mine as well. I do think that, you know, it's going to be interesting to see where the shifts are next year, depending on South American weather, what farmers will plant next year. We're already getting questions around, you know, what's going to be more feasible for them, looking at financials and looking at where markets might be. So maybe just how acreage shape up for next year here in the U.S.
Well, let's start there. I think that'll be an interesting place to begin with, and then we'll come back to current day as you talk to producers about next year. And I've seen the budgets that the University of Illinois has produced for both corn and soybeans, and the losses are the largest predicted at this time of year, I think, out of any of the past 4 years. I'm almost positive that is the case, without any government payments involved in them. What have you been telling them about next year?
Well, you know, we do a lot of financial analysis here, and even this last year when we were looking at planting for 2020, depends on what input cost structure each farmer has, but there were a lot of folks with the new genetics in the soybeans, especially in, you know, the dicamba. I know that's kind of a dirty word now, but, you know, those beans were, you know, had the latest genetics, and people have really caught on to planting beans first, planting them early. So, you know, we're getting better yields, and you looked at what prices were and what costs were, and there was a lot of people that over the last couple of years did shift to more soybeans. Now, when you look at new crop prices, you know, today we closed November, red November here, 9.45, and red December 21 corn at 3.83. And when you start looking at that, that ratio is not saying plant more corn. I mean, it's more even favoring beans right now with the way beans have rallied. So depending on how input costs shape up as we go through winter and what happens in South America will be key, because it's going to be more of a bean-led rally. If there's a problem with La Nina down there, I think that soybeans would probably be front and center, and they would start to move. And obviously corn, the safrinha crop, is going to be important in what Argentina grows. But I think we just have better fundamentals around beans right now with demand, the balance sheet here. And I think that next year could really favor growing more bean acres here in the U.S. is what I'm seeing. Is that what you're seeing, Joe?
Yeah, I think so. I think that as I sit here today, soybeans are the clear winner next year in terms of, you know, projected revenues or profits, if there are any profits to be had at all, depending on the operation. But it's going to change. Nobody's made their decisions yet totally. And there's a lot of things that could change between now and the time that those decisions are made. I don't necessarily know that that's the most immediate issue impacting the markets right now at all, to be honest.
But I just think it'll be interesting as we move into South American growing season, how that shapes up. And, you know, we start putting crop plans together early. And while things can be changed, like Joe said, you know, you're pretty committed once you put fall anhydrous and things on. But, you know, until you have any of those things done, you can always do switching. And a lot of guys are pretty flexible to do that when you get into late spring.
Well, I do have one follow-up question for you, Darren, on this. Are your clientele fairly flexible on what percentage of their acreage do you think that they would be willing to leave open as a, I don't know whether this is going to be corn or soybeans?
No, I would say that we have, you know, we have probably half our client base. They're in a rotation. They're not going to switch. They stick to that routine. But I would say the other half are pretty flexible. I mean, I know over the last two or three years, we've had some guys switch, you know, from 6,000 acres of corn, 4,000 acres of beans to growing all beans. It made so much sense, you know, like 2018, you know, and they had a phenomenal year when they got their bean yields out of the field. So some guys really look at that, and some guys are in a position that they can move aggressively. I would say that that's, you know, less than 10% of our clients that would do that. But the other 40 would probably leave 15, 20% of those acres open for that switching maybe into the middle to late part of spring as they see prices shape up. February has a lot to do with it, with crop insurance, obviously. But then what is the market doing to buy those acres after the crop insurance price has been set?
Joe, let's come back to this crop year. What do you think the implications of a quick harvest across the United States might be?
The implication, as I see it right now, is that the corn and soybean markets are two totally different animals. In the soybean market, you have high prices relative to what we've seen the last couple of years, and you have little to no carry in the market. There's absolutely no incentive for a farmer to take soybeans and put them in the bin. The logical decision here would be to take your soybeans, sell them out of the field, and put the corn in the bin. And I think what the implication for that is right now is that you can see some harvest pressure in this bean market short term. That's very much a possibility. And that's not to say that you won't see the same thing in corn, but it could be a little bit exaggerated this year because of that. It doesn't make any sense when you look at the forward curve in the bean market to take the beans with a $10 board and put them in the bin. And corn, I think harvest pressure or the perception of harvest pressure or the idea that harvest pressure will occur, I think it's impacted both markets this week.
I don't disagree with anything Joe said. In fact, you know, I think the basis too is, you know, favors, you know, letting stuff go at harvest here, especially on the bean side. You know, the corn price hasn't gotten up to where farmers are real thrilled about it still, even with a firm basis in a lot of places. But The soybeans have been firm. It's like we sold a lot of stuff to China, and it's like they booked one side of the trade, but they hadn't originated the beans from the farmers, so the basis had to strengthen even in the early part of fall, and it's still firm today, even though we're getting into more beans. So I'm with Joe. I'm trying to be completely sold out on beans. You can read them on the board, but I want to be sold out at fall or by the end of the year. And then, hey, if South America shows up with a weather problem, you can buy them back on paper. But I think they're fairly priced in this $10 to $11 area. I mean, we've been to $10.46, but I don't see beans getting like a crazy, you know, head of steam to go a lot higher unless we get a South American problem. And what Joe said earlier, or what we talked about maybe before on air, was just the acres are going to be expanded in South America big time. They're very profitable down there. So I can't see why a guy'd hold beans. As far as corn, we got a lot of storage. Our guys have a lot of storage. We're telling them to stick it in the bin. I think this Chinese demand for corn could be good throughout even the spring of 21 into our summer possibly. I think they're really short on their temporary reserves, and I kind of like storing corn, getting rid of the beans. So I think that's kind of where Joe is too.
Joe, a couple of quick questions as a follow-up on the export market for soybeans and the grain stocks report, both, which are that report is due out next Wednesday on the 30th. But soybeans really go through crush, and we have a pretty good tally. Any reason to think that'll be off?
No, not necessarily. There are always those out there that will look at, you know, like a strong basis situation or some sort of indicator, and it will lead them to the conclusion that the stocks number should be low or that the stocks number should be high or whatever. I personally never in my career had any luck trying to guess these reports or guess what the surprise may be. Essentially what the numbers are, I mean, they're the old crop carryout numbers, and it's they're going to continue to be plugged into balance sheets for new crop as beginning stocks. So I don't see much there in terms of a big surprise. But it wouldn't be a surprise if I saw it, I guess.
Yeah, so this is the one time of year where you can almost, not always, but almost take those numbers from September 30th and then plug them into the new crop as the carry-in for soybeans and to some extent for corn. On the export market, Joe, for soybeans, it's been really pretty good until Thursday morning. What are your expectations?
China will stop buying U.S. soybeans at some point here during the next, I don't know if it's a month, 2 months, 3 months, but they're going to stop and they're going to start buying Brazilian beans, barring a very significant weather issue. I'm not talking just a run of the mill dry spell. I'm talking a very significant weather issue is what you would need for that not to happen. China's going, in my opinion, to continue to be a low cost buyer. They're going to buy what is cheapest, and what is cheapest will not be out of the United States come first quarter of 2021. Again, barring a big time South American weather issue. So the question now is, what is the sales pace between now and say the time that they can start buying Brazilian beans and getting ready for those beans? Do we deliver? Do we actually ship everything that's on the books? Because we've got the best export book on record for beans. Is it all shipped? Does some of it get switched or canceled if the Brazilian crop is as good as has been advertised or lives up to its potential? There's still a lot of question marks here. These sales are great. They're fantastic. It's really helped to push the market up to some multi-year highs here, that sales pace. But it's not a guarantee that they all get shipped. It's really not.
Any commentary on the export market for soybeans, Darren?
I really don't have anything new to add to that. I think Joe hit it square on. I mean, it's just going to come down to, hey, if the price is lower because South America's got 130 million metric plus, you know, metric ton crop coming in, Brazil alone, and we don't have a drought in Argentina or something like that with this La Nina, hey, we could get them canceled, we could get them switched. I mean, China is not above that, right? I mean, they do stuff like that all the time. I think if they run into real weather problems, though, or maybe if they're delayed some more in getting things in, it could offer a few more weeks of export business or longer export business if they really have a shortage. And I think that shortage, if it comes, is going to come more in Argentina, southern Brazil, Uruguay, Paraguay. It's usually not a northern Brazil thing. I think that's where the bulk of the beans are grown anyway. But, you know, you will have some problems in Argentina because they provide so much meal to the world market. So it'll get interesting. It'll help our bean price if they do run into a problem like 2018.
Darren, you sit there in Peoria on the Illinois River. Have you seen any difficulties yet because of the closure? And what are your expectations going into the harvest season?
Yeah, I can't say I've heard a lot of complaining or really any difficulty. We moved a lot of grain early, and obviously we made provisions for them to not get done on time. But I haven't really seen it really affect a whole lot. But a lot of our stuff, you know, doesn't come through Peoria. We work in Iowa, Indiana, other places. But I do expect that, you know, when the Illinois does get fixed up and open back up, it's really going to help to give farmers more choices. But I haven't really seen any difficulties with it. We kind of knew ahead of time and planned for it.
What are your thoughts on ethanol production in the United States, COVID-19, and usage?
As far as ethanol usage, you know, I think it's got a lot of headwinds. You know, I know the government numbers are still pretty decent. They got, 5-1. They took 100,000 or 100 million ton or 100 million bushels off this last report. But my number's a little smaller than that. I mean, I still think there's a lot of issues out here. I hope I'm wrong. But, you know, whether COVID shows up again or not, which there is going to be plenty of scares as we move in, I think, to fall and winter, I really think this has changed the psychology of a lot of things and a lot of people and a lot of companies. And in Peoria here, we're downtown, so we work here every day. We're ready to work remote if we have to shut down, but we come in and we're together as a group. But, you know, the hospitals are running at half capacity. Caterpillar is still working remote. So this downtown area is just dead with people having their employees stay at home. And so if you think about that and the implications of that on driving just to work every day and back home, how much less usage that is. And a lot of these companies are talking about, hey, we've been more productive. We've learned. We're saving money. I had a company the other day tell me, you know, they got like 1,200 and some employees, and they're saving over $1.5 million a month by not, you know, having office facilities going forward and thinking about leaving everybody home. So I don't think we know the full implications of this yet, but that's what has me really concerned about ethanol in general is just gas usage, you know, and even though we might be ready to blend it at a heavier rate and some of the things that are happening politically, you know, I think there are some headwinds, and that's the biggest use for our corn. And so I'm kind of concerned about that. If COVID hits and we get another shutdown or anything like that, I'm really concerned.
And then you have, Joe, states like California are saying in, 2035, we may not allow new combustible cars to be sold in the state.
I don't know what's going to happen that far out. I envision a future where just about every household has at least one electric car. I think that's probably where we're headed. Shorter term, you cannot, you have to be very specific about what this COVID thing did to corn. It at the end of the day, it's responsible for the loss of probably 1 billion bushels of corn demand. It was north of 500 million in the old crop marketing year, and it could be 300, 400, 500 this year, depending on how it shapes out. If we never had COVID and we didn't lose that demand for corn via ethanol, this entire year would have been entirely different. I am pretty confident we would have been able to sell December corn well north of $4 at some point during the spring or summer on a little weather hiccup or whatever. I think you would have seen the upper end of the range like you've seen in each of the last several years, you know, 420, 430, 440. I think you would have seen something like that. And it would have led you to a totally, totally different market. So this thing and the amount of demand that we lost, it has multi-year implications on the corn market. It's not just that it hurt the corn market this past spring. That these implications carry into this new crop marketing year. And until we get back to grinding corn for ethanol at a normal pace, the implications continue. So I just can't understate how big of a deal it is.
I'd like each of you to take up new crop corn at this point. Give me your best ideas of what producers should do, given the price tag we have for new crop corn and whether they should use their bins, what kind of logistical problems they might be facing as well. I'll start with you, Joe.
Well, there's carry in the corn market, so the bins should be used. the carry is not as good as I'd like it to be. I think December out to July 21 was like 17 or 18 cents. You'd typically like to see that at 25 or 30 before rolling your futures or HTAs forward or making a sale versus that July 21 contract. But in any case, there is some carry there to be taken advantage of. There could be more carry there to be taken advantage of. So given the, I'm going to go with the idea or the notion that most farmers have the ability to store some of the crop. And we talked about how most of the beans are going. They're going to be gone. They're not going in the bin. Corn's going to be the crop that goes in the bin. But don't put it in the bin and forget about it. Keep an eye on these spreads. Keep an eye on those deferred prices. You want to start setting prices for, you know, May delivery, June delivery, July delivery, if the opportunity presents itself. And that's where the opportunity will be if this carry remains in the market.
Yeah, I would agree with that. We're not seeing as good a carry as we'd like. You know, there's 18 cents roughly out to July. We'd like to see, like Joe said, that 25 to 30, but we're just, I don't think we're going to see it. Maybe a little bit more to be added here during harvest, but we're 55% sold on corn. We made our last sale at 377.5 dees, and we plan to roll that, you know, in HTAs or short futures or even lifted if it's in the account. And we want to re-own most, if not all, the bushels on this break into harvest. And I think we can, you know, maybe get another dime down in corn or maybe a little bit more than that if we see harvest pressure. But we want to be friendly to market into at least the end of the year, beginning of next year. I think there's going to be great demand for corn. So we like maintaining ownership, using the bins the best we can. The base is good. We're moving stuff and just re-owning on paper. So I'd say it's similar to what Joe said.
Anything on the global demand side that we should take up?
China, I mean, is obviously like the big thing that everybody's focused on right now. And China's got this massive book of U.S. soybeans booked. Same thing with corn. One thing that a lot of people haven't talked about is that they've seen a huge recovery in their hog herd. I think they're up like 30% or something year over year now. And keep in mind that nobody ever talks about this either. You know, when the trade war started, China was able to tariff U.S. beans because it didn't need the beans because African swine fever started around the same time. They didn't have the appetite for the beans that they would have in a normal year when that trade war started. And now they're getting back to the point where we got all these hogs to feed and we're getting back to normalish type scenario there. It's all kind of interesting, the timeline that played out there. But I mean, any talk about export demand all reverts back to China, essentially.
And so it is about global demand, and it's not only about the number of hogs that are on hand in China and that rebuilding of the herd after African swine fever, but poultry stepped in and filled a large portion of the red meat supply or meat supply availability in that country, and those birds probably have not gone away. And then you hear differing things about the Chinese corn crop itself. I've seen in the last week that it's good. I've seen in the last 3 weeks that it's bad. And the meteorologists have told us most of the growing season, and they're in the same hemisphere, so on our growing season, that crop has been in pretty good shape because it's in the northeastern part of China. And that would be to the north and east of the primary floods that took place over the summertime. I don't know, Darren, if you've got any thoughts on the size of the corn crop there, the size of the number of animal units that they have on hand, but what that looks like.
Well, you know, in talking with people that, you know, have offices there, or people on the ground, or they do cash business with them, China typically needs about 30 million more metric tons of corn a year than they can produce. You know, they got a permanent reserve and a temporary reserve, and the permanent reserve they do not touch. They don't want to touch. They keep that for food security. But the temporary reserve they use to just massage prices internally and making sure that, you know, people can continue to earn and make money, and they have it at prices that those farmers can profit from. But they've drawn those temporary reserves down to razor thin levels. I mean, they almost depleted them there at the end of August, first week of September. and from the information I get. And then, you know, some of the area of the country did have a drought, a small area. Some of the area had massive flooding. I've heard that their corn crop will be off about 10 million metric tons from normal. So that's not a big deal with what they produce. But if you take a look at their temporary reserves and their appetite for corn, I actually think they could come for a lot more corn than what, you know, they have said. And I think they'll open up more licenses for that. But I'm really expecting that by the time we get to June, we could see them take anywhere from 15 to 20 million metric tons of corn from us. I know that's a lot, but they've already taken a lot more than people thought they'd take. And I think they could be even more aggressive. And so I think it really depends, you know, the Ukraine and that whole area over there, Europe, Eastern Europe's pretty dry. Long time before we plant a corn crop, but La Nina has a funny effect on different places around the globe. So if they would run into any complications over there or the second crop in Brazil, the Safrina crop, you know, we could see them taking a lot more corn from us. So I'm kind of bullish on the corn demand. And I need to be because I think I'm bearish on ethanol demand, right? And so I think the exports are what's going to really help us. So I think they're in a desperate situation over there for corn stocks. And I think that we're going to keep seeing them come for more corn in our market.
Joe Vaclavic, anything to add on that? If not, your final word.
I'll go with my final word. I talked a little bit about soybeans and the spread structure and why it makes no sense to put beans in the bin. That doesn't mean that I'm bearish the bean market or that I have any opinion at all on the bean market. I'm simply telling you that the spread structure is telling you to sell now. If you want to re-own, do it on paper and do it using a deferred month. There's no carry in the market, therefore there's no penalty. So the things that I talked about at harvest, you know, a lot of people are going to put corn in the bin, a lot of people are going to sell beans. That has nothing to do with my opinion in regard to price direction. It has everything to do with the way that the markets are set up right now. Little to no carry in the bean market and a little bit of carry, enough carry to make it worth your while to store the corn.
Joe Vaclavic is with Standard Grain. Darren Fry is with Water Street Solutions. Your final word for the day, Darren?
Yeah, I think take advantage of what we're seeing with firm basis and the beans. Like Joe said, the market structure, it wants the beans. There's no carry in this market. Hey, get ready to re-own on paper if a problem emerges in South America, if that is what you wish to do. The corn, I think we have opportunities out into the spring of 21. And I like the fact that storing corn in the bin would really be a direction that I would encourage farmers to go. Get rid of the beans, store the corn.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may hear the whole of our program anytime you'd like on our website at willag.org or search for Commodity Week in your favorite podcast applications. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Darren Fry of Water Street Solutions out of Peoria, Illinois, and Joe Vaclavic from Standard Grain in Gallatin, Tennessee. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.